January 8th, 1964.
And this administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America.
In Washington, President Lyndon B. Johnson vows to help America's poor in his first State of the Union speech to Congress. 1998, Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind of a 1993 bombing at New York's World Trade Center, gets life in prison. Just a few years later, the Twin Towers collapse in the September 11th terrorist attacks. And 1942.
This result implies that everything in the universe is determined by the laws of science.
Stephen Hawking, the physicist whose works include A Brief History of Time, is born in Oxford, England. Today in history, January 8th.
10 seconds. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. 3, 2, 1, blast off.
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
Can I offer you a penny for your thoughts? As a matter of fact, how about three? One penny for you, one penny for me, and one penny for our minds engaged, not so sexually, getting intimately closer as we approach the climactic altitude of nude, mental, sensational conversation, because I'm trying to get to know everything about you from the neck up. So, these are not your typical sexual poetical prose. I'm trying to close the door on that all too familiar freaky foreplay game with which most people have chose to approach you. While they're trying to get deeply embedded in the fine fibers of your bed sheets, I'm trying to find and define the fibers with which your mind speaks. I want to engage you. I want to engage you by putting a 2-carat solitaire diamond on your mind and marrying your every thought. I want to lick every inch of every crevice so I can get an oral fix from each orifice and taste your passionate imagination. I'd rather be naked and exposed, holding you as we're lying and you're crying while confiding and describing the tough times you had in life and how you don't know if you can keep a relationship long enough to be somebody's wife. I want to feel the heartbeat of all your inner rhythms as they lead me towards your warm, wet waterfalls of feminine thoughts, and I'll swim within them from backstrokes to breaststrokes. I'm penetrating every entrance to your mind, taking my time to find out everything about you. Did I ever tell you about how you fell asleep in my presence and your mere essence kept me up for hours as I cowered with this feeling of a sexually unadulterated mental connection? And as you laid by my side, I pushed my blinds aside and took the time in the moonlight of that night to count 72 eyelashes on the upper eyelid of your right eye. Because as you sleep, they remain open slightly. And while we probably move too quickly into some sexual stuff, I've always cared more about the explicitly illicitness that came from between your lips, meaning your voice. So now I'm standing here ready to trade in all the sexual acts that we've performed for the chance to reform the very foundation and basis of our relationship. And I reiterate my opening statement and I offer you another penny for your thoughts.
The opposing point of view in this conflict rests on a fundamentally different vision of man. As a creature not of God, but of the state, in this system, the value of individual man diminishes sharply, and the state is all important. The state will run his life for him. What we oppose fundamentally is the aggressive nature of the state, its unceasing effort to expand wherever it can, to grow bigger, to take over, to supplant. This deadly impulse toward aggression, we oppose as a continual threat to peace.
President Reagan told the nation last night there may be some new tax on the course ahead. The news conference story and correspondent Bill Plant.
Responding to fears on Capitol Hill, the president last night indicated that he agrees federal deficits in the years ahead are unacceptably large. He seemed to suggest that he might be more flexible than he's been letting on where defense spending is concerned.
If it can be cut, it will be cut. But the priority must be not if it means reducing our ability below the level at which we can declare ourselves safe.
But if there is flexibility on defense, there still seems to be none on tax increases.
Increasing taxes is not the way out of a recession. Whatever we do, we must not be tempted into some temporary treatment of of a deficit before us.
Mr. Reagan declined to discuss the specifics of possible budget cuts while he's still working on them, but he seemed to be promising some fairly substantial ones. The news conference ended on a note of optimism when the president was asked if U.S.-Soviet arms talks are stalemated.
No, they're not. They know better than that. As a matter of fact, General Rowney believes that within a year we've got a possibility of having an agreement on START.
Bill Plant, CBS News, the White House.
Mr. Reagan was asked about the presidential commission appointed to come up with some solution to the Social Security crisis. The commission got a 15-day extension of time in which to work, and some members have asked the president for guidance in this touchy matter.
I don't care how much they ask for it. For me to impose myself on the commission and say, hey, fellas, this is the way I want you to go, I would then stand back, cock my ear, and wait for the loud outcry from Capitol Hill, and the same old political football would be seen going up in the air like a punt on third down.
The commission is supposed to complete its work by January 15th. A Soviet scientist denies there's anything wrong with a nuclear-powered satellite, which the Pentagon insists is out of control and about to re-enter the atmosphere. Don McNeil reports from Moscow.
Soviet Cosmos 1402, a nuclear-powered spy satellite, is in safe condition, according to Russian scientists. Speaking at a news conference, Vladimir Kotelnikov, vice president of the Soviet Academy of Sciences, denied American reports that the satellite has gone out of control and could crash to Earth with radioactive material later this month. Answering questions by Western correspondents, Kotelnikov said, we make regular contact with Cosmos 1402, and we have no fears about its future. Don McNeil, CBS News, Moscow.
This is Bill Lynch in Washington. U.S. officials say it's still possible for the Soviets to keep Cosmos 1402 from falling back to Earth, but they regard the chances as very remote. They say the nuclear-powered radar spy satellite failed to attain a good orbit when it was launched August 30th, and that it has failed to respond to repeated telemetry instructions since mid-December to fire its booster rocket that would send the reactor safely into high Earth orbit. Instead of spinning normally, Cosmos 1402 is said to be tumbling out of control, so that even if the rocket did fire, there's no assurance it would go in the right direction. Another possibility is for the Soviets to launch a killer satellite to blow it up. Even then, some of the heavily shielded nuclear fuel would probably fall to the Earth's surface. U.S. intelligence still expects Cosmos 1402 to break up by January 23rd, but no one is able to predict where its mildly radioactive debris will come down. Bill Lynch, CBS News, Washington.
Marcia Smith is the aerospace specialist with the Library of Congress, and she keeps track of all launches. We asked her this morning how many Soviet satellites have been launched with nuclear power plants.
If my memory serves me correctly, they'd launched 10 by the time of Cosmos 954, so 9 of those would have successfully separated. They launched one in 1980 that was successfully separated, 3 last year, and 3 of the 4 launched this year separated successfully.
So there's a lot of uranium up there floating around, isn't there?
Yes, there is. But the point is that they put it in such a high orbit that by the time it would decay, it would no longer present a radioactivity threat. And the problem isn't so much the uranium-235 as it is the fission products that come out of it.
How fast can NORAD, as the day of reentry approaches, predict impact?
Well, from what I've seen, the most accurate prediction of impact will come about 12 hours before it actually reenters.
Yeah! But the failed Russian rocket is causing a few headaches here on Earth. Seen in this animation by Analytic Graphics, Phobos Grunt, stuck in Earth's orbit, is due to crash land in the new year. Launched in November, the probe was intended to fly to the Martian moon and bring back samples. Technical faults have left it stranded in low orbit above Earth, and now scientists predict it will plummet back through the atmosphere around the first week of January. Experts don't know exactly where the 13-ton craft will land.
Back in the book segment tonight, according to a Fox News Opinion Dynamics poll, 55% of the American public believes the government is likely withholding information about UFOs. And 24% of Americans believe aliens have actually visited this planet. In the Czech Republic, according to a 1999 poll, 62% believe extraterrestrials exist, more than believe in God. Thank you.
Well, this isn't doomsday, folks, unless you're talking about doomsday for the dollar. But it's about a lot more than just nuclear proliferation in Iran, and this certainly merits all of our attention. Let's go around the world on the RSOE, folks. We've had minor earthquakes pretty much all over the U.S. the last 36 hours. We had a meteorite seen by many people hit the ground in Mexico. The earthquake swarm in the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico region is on full force, and we actually had a fairly large earthquake on the western side of the Cocos Plate, so we can go ahead and say that this region has become active once more. Also becoming active is El Hierro. The volcano there is surprising scientists, and we've seen some pyroclastic bursts come out of there. The extreme weather in Europe dumped a ton of snow there last couple of days. Actually was an avalanche in Switzerland yesterday, and volcanic activity is increasing in Indonesia. They've got about 6 or 7 volcanoes that they're watching all throughout the Southwest Pacific. Folks, a lot of you know that at some point today we're supposed to have parts of this magnetic filament eruption strike Earth's magnetic field, and we're probably going to get hit with the coronal hole stream about that same time. Now, folks, if you don't know, these magnetic filaments are arriving all over the sun, ejecting all over the sun. They're very unstable. So right now, in the few hours before these things hit, we can see that we're actually seeing some solar wind speed that's a bit higher than average, which is what is accounting for the slight disturbance you see, the temporal variations on the induction magnetometer and the horizontal disturbance here on the flux gate. So it'll be really interesting to see what kind of effects these things have when they hit today.
Etna has begun spewing out lava, the volcano's first eruption of the new year. Europe's tallest and most active volcano began erupting in the early hours of Thursday morning, but with no risk to nearby villages or air traffic. Researchers say the lava flow centered in Etna's summit, originating from the new southeast crater. Enormous columns of ash could also be seen rising from the crater, with local news reports saying that they reached over 5,000 meters into the air. Etna, which is located above the Sicilian town of Catania, often erupts but rarely causes any damage.
Majestic, often endangered and prized. The annual Japanese whaling season is in full swing, and where there are whalers, there are activists. One group, Sea Shepherd, have been battling it out with ships from the Japanese whaling body, the Institute for Cetacean Research, with the environmentalists trying to get close enough to tangle the whalers' propellers with ropes, whilst the Japanese respond with water cannon. It's a dangerous environment. One of Sea Shepherd's ships, the Bridget Bardot, was nearly wrecked by stormy weather, and a similar boat, the A.D. Gill, was sunk in 2010 after colliding with a whaling ship. Each side calls the other terrorists, and both deny they're lawbreakers.
Experience of a lifetime that almost killed Aaron Langworthy.
Ragdoll.
Oh, what? 25 meters above the water, the unthinkable happened. Aaron's bungee cord snapped, sending her plummeting head first into the crocodile-infested waters of the Zambezi River in Zimbabwe.
It went black straight away, and I felt like I'd been slapped all over.
She's in the f***ing water!
The icy water helped bring Erin out of her daze. It was then the real fight for survival began. With her legs still tied, she was sucked downstream towards the raging rapids, the trailing bungee cord snagging on rocks, dragging her under.
I actually had to swim down and yank the bungee cord out of whatever it was caught into.
Struggling to keep her head above water, Erin made it to rocks near the riverbank. It was there she waited for rescue.
When I was first pulled out of the water, they put me on my back, and so all the water that I'd inhaled meant that I couldn't breathe, so I made them roll me onto my side, and that's when I started coughing out water and blood.
Medevac to South Africa, the 22-year-old spent a week in hospital, where, covered in bruises, doctors were amazed she suffered no major injuries.
Yes, I think it's definitely a miracle that I survived.
Attempts to contact the bungee company have been unsuccessful.
Pray. Let's pray right now. Come on, saints. Let's all pray. You in your homes.
Father, yes, in Lord. The name of the Lord Jesus, yes, I pray for our president tonight. I pray that you would give him the wisdom of Solomon to lead this nation into war against the enemies of righteousness. I pray for the good men and women in Washington, D.C., that they will stand in righteous boldness for this righteous cause. I pray in the name of Jesus that every power and principality of darkness will be brought to confusion.
Yes.
When this war begins.
Yes.
I pray, God, that the enemy shall be destroyed and that the angels of heaven shall go before the U.S. and British forces, bringing deliverance to that part of the world, and most assuredly, deliverance to Israel.
It was one of the most talked about funerals of 2011 for more reasons than one. Distraught North Koreans laid to rest their dear leader Kim Jong-il in December. And the press was there to capture every moment, including this remarkable photo. Twitter was sent into a frenzy when this image appeared, showing what seemed to be a giant soldier towering over everyone else at the procession.
The voodoo, what you don't dare do, people.
Holograms are three-dimensional images produced by two distinct beams of light, but until now they could only be seen but not touched. Now scientists in Japan have changed all that with the creation of touchable holograms.
Researchers at Tokyo University have come up with a technology that is a first and significant step away from the mouse and keyboard, touchable holograms.
Up until now, holography has been for the eyes only, and if you try to touch it, your hand would go right through. But now we have a technology that also adds the sensation of touch to holograms.
The technology consists of software that uses ultrasonic waves to create pressure on the hand of the user touching the projected hologram. Researchers are using two Wiimotes from Nintendo's Wii gaming system to track a user's hand. The technology was used at SIGGRAPH, an annual computer graphics conference, and has so far only been tested with relatively simple objects. But its inventors have big plans for touchable holograms in the future.
The voodoo.
Japan's devastating earthquake and tsunami in March, the world held its breath watching a potential disaster unfold at the Fukushima nuclear power plant. Fortunately, though, plant officials worked quickly to reassure the public that their fears of radiation leaks were unfounded. Now, a lot of experts are tying these natural disasters to global warming. So we can't ignore the fact that 2011 had the second hottest summer ever on record. Duncan, how did the heat affect you?
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, unless every place I went into didn't have air conditioning, it would affect me, but they do, so it doesn't matter to me.
An opening 2 minutes to Mr. Vermin Supreme.
Thank you. Gingivitis has been eroding the gum line of this great nation long enough and must be stopped. For too long, this country has been suffering a great moral and oral decay in spirit and incisors. A country's future depends on its ability to bite back. We can no longer be a nation indentured. Our very salivation is at stake. Together, we must brace ourselves as we cross over to the bridge work into the 23rd century. Let us bite the bullet and together make America a sea of shining smiles from sea to shiny sea. Now, friends, some people will tell you that this mandatory toothbrushing law is about the secret dental police kicking down your door at 3 a.m. to make sure you've brushed. Friends, it is not. Some will mention the dental re-education centers or the preventative dental maintenance detention facilities. It's about none of these things. It's not about the government-issued toothpaste containing an addictive yet harmless substance. No, friends, it is not even about DNA gene splicing to create a race of winged monkeys to act as tooth fairies. Friends, what this mandatory toothbrushing law is really about is strong teeth for a strong America. My name is Vermin Supreme. I am a friendly fascist. I am a tyrant that you should trust, and you should let me run your life because I do know what is best for you. Yes, I am a politician. I will promise you anything your little electorate heart desires because you are my constituents. You are the informed voting public, and because I have no intention of keeping any promise that I make. Vote early, vote often. Remember, a vote for Vermin Supreme is a vote completely thrown away. I would like to take this moment to acknowledge my mother, who is in the audience here today. Please stand up, mother. Please stand up. If you can stand up, please stand up. She's going to try and stand up so you can acknowledge her. This is my mother. There you go. And 5 years ago this April, I gave her a kidney. My challenge to you people, everybody on the stage and everybody in the audience, give up a kidney.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Supreme. Thank you. The next two-minute opening, Mr. Randall Terry. Sir, you have 2 minutes from Ambassador Shoemaker.
Mr. Supreme, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Like some of the other candidates, including former Governor Romney, this is not your, shall we say, first rodeo.
Let us say that.
This is not the first time you have run for president in
Correct.
The New Hampshire primary. President Romney has been accused, and I'm not taking a position one way or the other, of taking different positions on different issues. I'm asking you right now, do you still stand by your pledge made in 2008 to provide a pony for every American.
Yes, I do, sir. Free ponies for all Americans, one of the overlooked issues in America today. My free pony platform is, of course, a jobs creation program. It will create lots and lots of jobs once we switch over to a pony-based economy. We'll also lower our dependence on foreign oil. We'll also be able to turn all that pony poop into methane gas and wonderful compost, so we'll be able to up our soil that is being depleted by agrochemicals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, the important thing to realize is that it is a federal pony identification program where you will need your pony with you at all times. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Supreme. Thank you, Mr. Green. Beth, your next question is for Mr. Supreme.
Mr. Supreme, I wanted to follow up on Ambassador Shoemaker's question.
Yes.
Regarding the ponies.
Yes.
Is that the only government entitlement program that you support? What other entitlement programs are you for?
Just that one. That's enough. But in the vein of energy production, I'd also like to address my harnessing the awesome power of zombies for energy sources. It's not just to run away from anymore. No, we have giant turbines that we're working on, and we will have lots of zombies, and we'll just sort of dangle brains in front of them, and then they will turn the giant turbines, creating energy to lessen the dependence on foreign oil in America here today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Supreme, your 30-second closing statement, please.
My name is Vermin, my name is Vermin, Vermin Supreme. My name is Vermin, my name is Vermin, my name is Vermin, Vermin, Vermin Supreme. And you can vote, and you can vote, and you can vote for me for president if you want to. And my name is Vermin. And, okay, thanks very much for coming out today. Oh, one more thing. Jesus told me to make Randall Terry gay with magic sprinkle dust.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Supreme. Thank you. All right.
He's turning gay.
All right. Okay.
What if the two-party system was actually a mechanism used to limit so-called public opinion? What if there were more than two sides to every issue, but the two parties wanted to box you into a corner, one of their corners? What if there's no such thing as public opinion, because every thinking person has opinions that are uniquely his own? What if what we call public opinion was just a manufactured narrative that makes it easier to convince people that if their views are different, then there's something wrong with that, or there's something wrong with them? What if the whole purpose of the Democratic and Republican parties was not to expand voters' choices, but to limit them? What if the widely perceived differences between the two parties was just an illusion? What if the heart of the government policy remains the same, no matter who's in the White House? What if the heart of government policy remains the same no matter what the people want? What if those vaunted differences between Democrat and Republican were actually just minor disagreements? What if both parties just want power and are willing to have young people fight meaningless wars in order to enhance that power? What if both parties continue to fight the war on drugs just to give bureaucrats and cops bigger budgets and more jobs? What if government policies didn't change when government leaders did? What if no matter who won an election, government stayed the same? What if government was really a revolving door for political hacks bent on exploiting the people once they're in charge? What if both parties supported welfare, war, debt, bailouts, and big government? What if the rhetoric that candidates displayed on the campaign trail was dumped after electoral victory? What if Barack Obama campaigned as an anti-war, pro-civil liberties candidate and then waged senseless wars while assaulting your rights that the Constitution is supposed to protect? What if George W. Bush campaigned on a platform of non-intervention and small government and then waged a foreign policy of muscular military intervention and a domestic policy of vast government borrowing and growth? What if Bill Clinton declared that the era of big government was over, but actually just convinced Republicans like Newt Gingrich that they can get what they want out of big government too? What if the Republicans went along with it? What if Ronald Reagan spent 6 years running for president, promising to shrink the government, but then the government grew while he was in the White House? What if, notwithstanding Reagan's ideas and cheerfulness and libertarian rhetoric, there really was no Reagan revolution at all? What if all this is happening again? What if Rick Santorum is being embraced by voters who want small government, even though Senator Santorum voted for the Patriot Act, for an expansion of Medicare, and for raising the debt ceiling by trillions of dollars? What if Mitt Romney is being embraced by voters who want anyone but Barack Obama, but they don't realize that Mitt Romney might as well be Barack Obama on everything from warfare to welfare? What if the biggest difference between most candidates was not substance, but style? What if those stylistic differences were packaged as substantive ones to reinforce the illusion of a difference between Democrats and Republicans? What if Mitt Romney wins and ends up continuing most of the same policies that Barack Obama promoted? What if Barack Obama's policies, too, are merely extensions of those from George W. Bush? What if a government that manipulated us could be fired? What if a government that lacked the true and knowing consent of the governed could be dismissed? What if it were possible to have a real game changer? What if we could make elections matter again?
Politics today, the first ballots of any consequence in 1972 were being counted in Iowa, and Senator Edmund Muskie picked up some important support. Governor Milton Schapp of Pennsylvania endorsed Muskie. That's important because Schapp's Pennsylvania delegation will be the third largest at the Democratic convention with 182 delegates. And Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm of Brooklyn today became the 10th Democratic office holder to make a formal announcement for the presidency, and here's what she said.
I stand before you today as a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency of the United States of America. I am not the candidate of Black America, although I am black and proud. I am not the candidate of the women's movement of this country, although I am a woman, and I'm equally proud of that. I am the candidate of the people of America. And my presence before you now symbolizes a new era in American political history. Of course, I am going out here to try to capture this nomination. And with about 10 or 11 different people running, and I'm the only unique individual that's running, there's no telling what can happen. But in the event I'm not able to achieve said nomination, I want to be in a position where all of those forces in America that have never had any real input into who is going to be the chief executive of this land will have me as their instrument, namely blacks, women, young, Spanish-speaking people, and therefore, in the most beautiful possible bloodless revolution at the Democratic National Convention, we can get together a ticket that is reflective of all different segments that make up this great land called America.
President Obama was all smiles when he left Hawaii on Tuesday morning, but he might not be come November. It's presidential election year in the US, and polls suggest he's not as popular as he used to be. We're also about to get our first indication as to who he'll be going up against in the election. Republicans are voting in the first of their caucuses today in Iowa. Some experts are predicting this man, Mitt Romney, may lock down the nomination sooner than expected. His tactics being to constantly attack Barack Obama. He currently leads in the polls.
An entitlement nation.
Ron Paul, this man, also reportedly has a good chance in Iowa, but political commentators believe he's unlikely to be able to compete with Romney in big states like New Hampshire. Rick Santorum is gaining ground too, and so is former Speaker of the House of Representatives Newt Gingrich, despite going from Iowa favourite to fighting for fourth place, probably with Rick Perry. Michelle Bachmann, the only woman in the race, is struggling following a surge in support for Rick Santorum, who appeals to the same base of conservative Christians. She's also having trouble with a lack of money and staff desertions. Iowa voters are making their decision today to begin the state-by-state race to determine who they want to take on Barack Obama.
Romney has gone on the attack against his rival Newt Gingrich, raising questions about Gingrich's now infamous spending at Tiffany's, the New York jewelry store. But the fact is, Romney is by far the wealthiest of the candidates for president this year, with a net worth estimated at over $250 million, with a B. And as we found, his tastes can be every bit as lavish as those of Gingrich.
Romney has not made public his latest federal tax returns, but financial disclosure forms required of all candidates reveal that he and his wife have had millions of dollars in offshore funds in the Cayman Islands and elsewhere, places that offer huge tax advantages to investors.
Well, the primary advantage to setting those funds up in an offshore jurisdiction like the Cayman Islands or Bermuda is that it helps the investors avoid tax.
The Romney campaign says he has paid taxes on all of his income, including the offshore investments, and the investments are now held in a blind trust. But tax experts say the fact that Romney's company, Bain Capital, under his leadership, established investment funds offshore in the first place helped them to attract business from people looking to avoid U.S. taxes. Romney's campaign says he may eventually make his tax returns public, but he declined our request to see them now.
Face an extraordinary challenge in America, and you know that.
Mitt Romney may have pipped Rick Santorum to top spot in the Iowa Republican caucus, but the real stars of the contest were two women called Edith and Carolyn.
Carolyn or Edith, you want to add anything to this conversation?
Both made unforgettable appearances via phone on CNN's election coverage. Basically, when some of the results appeared still not to have come in by around 1:30 in the morning, a CNN producer put the show's presenters in contact with Edith Pfeffer, the Republican chairwoman for Clinton County, and with Carolyn Tallet, the woman allegedly forced to bang on Edith's door to wake her up when no one could get hold of her.
Those figures were originally called in at 7:48 by the person in charge from that precinct.
On the phone, Edith couldn't understand why she was still needed because she said she had sent in the results earlier on, but there was some confusion. In the end, though, the two women went on to solve the mystery of the missing votes, revealing Mitt Romney as the winner and producing TV gold in the process.
Michelle Bachmann today implied that the media's coverage of her campaign is sexist. The candidate told a rally in New Hampshire that she believes that as a crazy woman, she's had to deal with scrutiny she would not face if she were a crazy man. Let's ask our first responders and see what they think. Joining us today, we have Duncan Birch, Laura Lee Hickok, and David Baradale, whose opinions are sponsored by Acura. Is Bachmann treated differently because she's a woman with a frighteningly apparent psychological instability?
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
Really, Laura Lee?
Yeah, every
really?
Time she says something that's objectively bizarre about how God told her to adopt 24 children or how same-sex marriage is the number one threat to this country, the press jumps down her throat.
They
now, they
do.
Would not
they
be
do.
Doing that to Mitt Romney if Mitt Romney were visibly deranged.
I don't buy this for a second.
Oh,
now,
come on.
If an insane male candidate said that Obama was responsible for swine flu, people would be, you know, they
you
would
really
be just as terrified
no,
by his ignorance.
Excuse me.
Yes,
excuse me. Look, she needs to start running a powerful, responsive V6 of a campaign and stop spending so much time worrying about the media.
Exactly.
You don't see this Acura TL worried about how it's being treated. I mean, this thing can take almost anything people can throw at it.
Well, if all this is true, how does Bachmann go about throwing off the focus of being an insane female candidate?
Oh, she's got to beat her crazy male opponents at their own game. If they're going to come out and supporting gun rights for the developmentally disabled, she should come out supporting gun rights for dogs.
Exactly. That is totally accurate, Ed. Laura Lee, I'm 100% accurate.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay, you know, when Bachmann started running around last week, though, in circles, rubbing herself with mud and shrieking wildly, the media focused completely on what her hair looked like during
right,
the incident.
Right, but when Herman Cain did the same thing just a few months ago, people focused on his insane babblings.
Not his
There's
looks.
A clear double standard.
No, that's because his insane babblings were cogent political points.
As were hers.
Yes, David?
I'm revving this powerful fuel-injected engine to show my support for Laura Lee's opinion.
And so last night, the people of Iowa spoke with a very clear voice, and so I have decided to stand aside. And I believe that if we are going to repeal Obamacare, turn our country around and take back our country, we must do so united. And I believe that we must rally around the person that our country and our party and our people select to be that standard bearer. And while I will not be continuing in this race for the presidency, my faith in the Lord God Almighty, this country, and our republic is unshakable. And of course, I'm deeply grateful to our entire campaign team here in Iowa, in South Carolina, and everywhere. I have no regrets, none whatsoever. We never compromised our principles, and we can leave this race knowing that we ran it with utmost integrity. We made a very important contribution to this race. I've been blessed to live a wonderful life. I'm grateful to have been a part of this presidential campaign. And so I thank you. I say God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
Dirty bit.
It's not very controversial to say that murder, assault, theft, fraud, bribery, extortion, and kidnapping are all immoral activities. We all learn early on that such forms of violence are not acceptable ways of achieving one's personal goals. Unless you are merely defending yourself from the violence of others, you don't use violence to get what you want. Any violation of that moral precept is aggression. Now, how many of you would go into a restaurant, or a grocery store, or a car dealership, or to any other business, and point a gun at the employees, demanding that they render their goods and services to you for free? or for a certain price, or to do it in a certain way. Hopefully none of you, right? Now, if you wouldn't be aggressively coercive in person to someone's face where they can see you, why would you do it under cover of darkness using a secret ballot?
Mr. Citizen moves the operating lever to the right, which unlocks the machine and locks out the world.
The non-aggression principle that I first heard about was my kindergarten teacher. It's wrong to just go up to some other kid, pound them in the head, and take their toy. You can't push them, you can't hit them. I mean, one way of putting it is immoral to initiate the use of force against another human being. And this is independent of countries, it is independent of age, it is independent of clothing, whether you're in a cop's uniform or a soldier's uniform or you're dressed up as Ronald McDonald. I mean, it is just wrong to initiate the use of force against others. But tragically and awfully and destructively, there are massive exemptions or exceptions to this basic rule in society at the moment. Taxes violate the non-aggression principle because taxes are the initiation of the use of force.
They've been convicted of tax evasion, sentenced to more than 5 years in jail each.
And so for the state to come and say, you must give us X amount of dollars or we're going to throw you in jail, is a clear, vivid, and simple violation of the non-aggression principle.
Our Federal Reserve System serves as a banker's bank.
I mean, yeah, the reality is that central banks give currency to government in the form of debt. And the government has to pay interest on all of the money that it borrows and all the money that it puts into circulation. And so, yeah, I mean, the income tax in the United States is being used to pay interest on debt. And it's being used to pay interest on debt that has been used to create currency.
The U.S. Mint issued a warning to Liberty Dollar that the use and mere possession of this so-called currency is illegal.
Because anybody who wants to set up a competing currency who says, look, I don't like the way that you have these fiat dollars not backed by gold or not backed by anything. I want to have a real currency. So I want to bypass this and create my own currency. Well, those people go to jail. They go to jail. It's exactly what you would expect when you give a group of private individuals a violent monopoly over the creation of currency. And then you get voters who can vote away the future's money for the sake of their own enrichment in the present. It doesn't take a moral genius to recognize that we do not have the right to enslave future generations through our spending. The way that people justify this kind of behavior is they, first of all, they vault over the morality of the situation completely and totally. And so they say, well, let's forget for a moment that the government is initiating the use of force against people in order to solve my problem. Let's just pretend that's not even there. It's a social contract and people can vote and there's choice and candidates and blah, blah. So you have to pretend that something is voluntary when it's in fact involuntary. And the second thing they do is they only look at the benefits to a specific group rather than the losses to the general group. And so what is going to happen to the poor people when the government runs out of money, when the government runs out of people it can borrow from, when the government runs out of money that it can print with any credibility? So, yeah, we have this terrible system where everything is created through debt, where a dollar that is created can create many multiples of itself through legally enforced and legally protected fractional reserve banking. All of these problems are caused by violations of two basic moral rules, property rights and the non-aggression principle, which are both two sides of the same coin. When you violate property rights and the non-aggression principle, things get worse and worse and worse. And then what people do is they say, you know, the problem is we haven't violated property rights and the non-aggression principle enough. And this is the great tragedy, is people say, well, it's a lack of regulation that has caused this, a lack of government intervention, it's a lack of laws, it's a lack of power, it's a lack of control, it's a lack of money printing, it's a lack of stimulus spending, it's a lack of government programs, it's a lack of Keynesianism. We need more counterfeiting, more violence, more laws, more controls, more power. We've got to outgrow using a club to get what we want. We've got to outgrow pointing guns at people, screaming at them, threatening them with jail, throwing them in the back of police cars, locking them up for years. We've got to find ways to help people who are addicted to drugs other than throwing them in jail. We've got to find ways to help poor people other than using guns to steal from others and running up massive debts, which are going to crush them in the long run. We have to find ways of dealing with education without pointing guns at parents and forcing them to pay taxes to pay for a substandard education. If we're going to solve problems in society, we must put down these guns and start talking, there is no other way we will ever solve these problems. If we use violence to get what we want, we will get a short-term gain and we will get a long-term pain.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.